Ray McKinley, when you took over the Glenn Miller Band, you had a decision to make, whether to use his theme, the well-known Moonlight Serenade, or your own Howdy Friends. Was it a difficult choice?
Oh, no. We used Moonlight Serenade. But we used to close with Howdy Friends and let all the boys play solos at the end of an evening, you know. Incidentally, I was playing the drums on that and singing with a gooseneck microphone, and a big trumpet player from Kansas named Jimmy Maxwell. And this guy was tremendous. He could have played tackle on anybody's pro football team. He had the most phenomenal lip I've ever heard. And when you hear the record, Arnold, you'll notice at the end that Eddie Zandy does a little, I don't know what to call it. It's not a musical passage because he's only got four bars. But he does a little technical thing that is very high. And then doggone if Maxwell doesn't come in there about a third above him and do more or less the same thing. And some of those notes are just not on a trumpet, but he plays them.
Good evening, this is Arnold Dean, and tonight we turn the spotlight on Ray McKinley on a one-night stand with the big bands. Brought to you in part by Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer, now in their 29th year of continuing excellence in sales and service.
Well, so this is Ray McKinley saying, how'd you do? And all the boys in the band say, howdy too. We hope this selection will satisfy your taste for some blues in hi-fi. Now some of the boys are gonna toot a bit. I'll introduce them by name, to wit. The first one you'll hear, just sit back and relax, Mr. Lenny Hambro and his alto sax. Thank you, Lenny. That was plainly hip. I can readily see how you got your rip. Seated at the piano is a boy named Paul. Come on, Texas, and play you all. Thank you, Paul. That was first rate. I refer to your performance on the 8-8. Now, how about a little trombone from a boy named Ray? Come on, Geneva, New York, and take it away. Thank you, Raymond. That was fine indeed. I guess on that point we all agreed. Now how about a little guitar from Mundell? Hey there, Mississippi, let's make it gel. Thank you, Bundy. That was mighty nice. Boy, you cover that skillet like white covers rice. Now the boys in the trumpets will engage in some farewell saluting at the back of the stage. Ernie Bernard! Vern Caron! Yes, that's enough. We certainly hope you enjoyed our stuff. But we'll be back again to play for you. Until the next time, toodaloo.
That's a great recording by Ray McKinley, whether it's used as an opening or closing number. It's called Howdy Friends, done by Ray McKinley, our special guest on WTIC's One Night Stand with the Big Bands. you can take advantage of a big deal on a little cat. Moriarty Brothers in Manchester is clearing out all their remaining 1976 Mercury Bobcats. This sleek runabout received an EPA rating of 34 miles per gallon on the highway and 24 miles per gallon in the city. Moriarty Brothers offers you an excellent selection of Mercury Bobcats in a wide choice of colors. The Bobcat has a 2.3-liter four-cylinder engine, front disc brakes, and four-speed transmission for tough performance and smooth, easy handling. Other features include rack and pinion steering, solid-state ignition, high-back bucket seats, rocker panel moldings, wheel covers, and much more. See the stylish and economical 1976 Mercury Bobcat at Moriarty Brothers, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer, at 315 Center Street in Manchester. Prices start at $2,995, excluding dealer prep and transportation. Visit Moriarty Brothers and find out why people love that Bobcat. Visit Moriarty's and you'll also find out why people have made Moriarty Brothers the oldest Lincoln Mercury dealership in the state of Connecticut. Our guest is Ray McKinley, and Ray, let me check the book here. Composer, author, publisher, musician, great vocalist. Born in Fort Worth, Texas, June 18th of 1910. Am I correct so far?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that 10, but you're right.
How old were you when you started playing drums?
I could play a snare drum when I was 6 years old. I did a little solo at the Elks Circus, they called it, in the Fort Worth Coliseum when I was either 6 or 7 years old. A snare drum was as big as I was. I went out there and played, I could always play the simple things on drums. Even then, I didn't even know what I was doing, but I could always play, you know, like rum pum pum rum pum pum rum pum doo dum doo dum dum dum. None of the other babies at that time could do that. They sound like they were killing snakes, you know. So I could always play drums, and I just got drums as I grew up. I played with all the little and big bands around Fort Worth, Texas, and then finally this band came along from out of town called Duncan Maron's Southern Entertainers, and they took me up to Chicago, the big city, with them, and that started the whole thing.
What was the first name band, Ray, a name that we would recognize that you played with?
I think the first big band, Arnold, that you would know of was very probably the Dorsey Brothers. We had been, Glenn Miller and myself and a bunch of kids from Denver, Colorado, were in Smith Ballou's orchestra, and we came back to New York from Denver, and we couldn't get a job, and things were floundering around, so Glenn went to Tommy and Jimmy and heard that they were organizing their first orchestra as the Brothers. So from that Smith Ballou Orchestra, we had the girl singer and five men became part of the original Dorsey Brothers Orchestra.
How long were you with the Dorseys?
Well, I was with them until Tommy walked off the stand that night.
You were there for their celebrated split, were you not?
Oh, yes. I was there for every second of it.
Was this something that you could see coming? I guess it was pretty
obvious.
Yes, it
was. Tommy was not the kind of guy who could share any kind of leadership with anyone. And he wanted to be the boss, and they'd have these arguments, and sometimes they'd get to be pretty hectic, you know, screaming and shouting and everything. So it had to come. A very amusing thing that I might pass on to you was when Tom Rockwell, the agent, came out the night after Tommy left the band, and of course Tommy was there, and Rockwell had Tommy over the table, over to one side, and he kept saying to him, "But what did Jimmy say to you that made you so mad?" And Tommy says, "He didn't say anything, he just bawled me out with his eyes."
I guess he had a way of doing that, though.
Jimmy was pretty good at that, yeah.
In 1939, I believe, you wanted to leave Jimmy Dorsey to get into partnership with your very good friend of very many years, Will Bradley, and there was a little difficulty in finding somebody to replace you, I guess, with the Dorsey band.
That's right. My notice was in for about a month or two, and I just felt that I'd have to force the situation, and Bill Burton was Jimmy's manager. He kept saying every night, "Well, I can't find anyone. You'll have to stay another week." "Well, I can't find anyone." This went on and on. Well, finally, I got a handful of nickels and went over to the phone booth, and I said, "I'll get you a drummer." And I got Dave Tough. So Dave Tough came out and played with the band for several weeks, and then they got Buddy Schutz, and I was able to get on my airplane and go on vacation in California.
How long had you known Will Bradley? I guess there was a band called Milt Shaw's Detroiters.
You're so right. How'd you know all these things?
George Simon's book.
Oh.
A little research.
Yes, that's right. He was the trombone player. When I first came to New York, he was the only trombone player in the Milt Shaw Orchestra, which was like a house band at Roseland. Fletcher Henderson was the other. They had two bands, you know. And Will was there and in the band, and we roomed together and got to know each other. And this all happened years later, getting the band together. Wasn't our idea. It was Willard Alexander's idea, getting us together, but we did know each other very well.
Bradley's an exceptional trombone player, is he not?
He certainly is. Will was always one of the greatest and his own worst enemy in the fact that he never was ambitious as a trombone player, at least recently, I understand. He doesn't like to take solos, for instance, but he's a tremendous trombone player. He was just unbelievable.
He's the one that I think Glenn Miller idolized above all others.
Yeah, that's right. He was Glenn's favorite.
When you decided to go into this co-leadership with Will Bradley, I guess you had pointed out before that you didn't feel that a drummer was a good natural leader for a band. Is that correct?
Well, yes, it did seem like there would be some mechanical difficulties.
Especially a drummer who also sings and...
It looked like it would be different, and of course Willard's idea there was to get this stature by association out of Will's name, you know, in association with mine, because I was known... But Will, nobody knew Will. He'd just been a staff trombone player around New York here, you know. Musicians knew him, but, I mean, as far as the public goes, nobody knew him. So his thinking, I'm sure, was the same thinking so many agents do, where they get a name or two, and then he puts some guy in there that's unknown or a girl in there that's unknown, and the people look at that and say, who's that? I never heard of him. Well, he must be all right because he's up there with them, you know. That sounds a little fat-headed, but I know that was his thinking.
We'll talk, Ray, about this one later on. Right now, let's listen to it. The Will Bradley Orchestra, spotlighting Ray McKinley and Celery Stalks at Midnight.
There you have the famous Celery Stalks at Midnight with Will Bradley and the orchestra. Entertaining? We continue our conversation, recorded with Ray McKinley at his home in Stamford, Connecticut. Ray, others in that Will Bradley band included, well, among them, Freddie Slack, the fine pianist from the Dorsey Band.
That's right. Freddie joined the band from the Dorsey Band. Freddie was great. In fact, Freddie was the heart and soul of those boogie-woogie efforts.
Yeah.
He and I used to cook up, with a little help from Don Ray and Huey Prince, the songwriters.
And a clarinetist by the name of Peanuts Huckle, I think one of the great jazz clarinetists of all time.
That's right, Arnold, but you know, at that time, he wasn't playing clarinet. As a matter of fact, we fired him twice because he couldn't play the clarinet well enough to play the simplest of things. This is a true story. He was a great tenor saxophone player, but he could not play the clarinet. And it wasn't until Peanuts went into the Army. He drew an early number out of the draft, jar that they used during the war, and was sent up to Camp Drum, I think it was, way up in the Adirondacks there someplace. And he was up there in all that cold weather and indoors and time on his hands as a musician in the Army, and they didn't know what to do with him. He just decided, well, I'm going to be a clarinet player, and he got this thing out and started practicing 4 or 5 hours a day, and it took him about a year and a half. But, boy, the next time I heard him, he was a clarinet player, and as you know now, he's the best.
How many records did you make with the Will Bradley Band for Columbia?
Oh, you're asking me something I can't answer, but I'd say a good 40 or 50, maybe more.
Mead Lux Lewis, Albert Ammons, and Pete Johnson had made Boogie Woogie very popular, but I guess this was the first big band that came along and really personalized it and made it a big band treat.
That's right. We were the first band to do it. Up till then, it had only been done pianistically.
There are three selections that come to my mind. Of course, there's Beat Me Daddy, Eight to the Bar. There's the trio number Down the Road a Piece and Celery Stalks at Midnight. Chronologically, what order did they come in?
Beat Me Daddy was first. That came out first. And then, Celery Stalks was recorded, believe it or not, at the same time, but it wasn't released. And Down the Road a Piece was just an accident. We didn't have the arrangement finished for whatever tune it was we were to have done on the date. And Don Ray and Huey Prince were songwriters, and they had been co-authors of Beat Me Daddy, Eight to the Bar. So they went downstairs in another room and cooked up a few little lines, you know, about the Down the Road a Piece, and came back up, and we sent all the band home except Doc Goldberg and Freddie Slack and myself, and we did the Down the Road a Piece. Incidentally, that other voice on the introduction, that's Don Ray. It says on the record it's Will Bradley, but it's not.
I was about to comment that it was Will Bradley's voice. It was not.
No, it was Don Ray.
So you can't always believe what you read, though.
No, you sure can't.
Boy, where's you going? I seen you going down the street the other night.
Oh, I wasn't going nowhere. I've been where I was going.
That's all right. I didn't see you. You just plumb out of sight.
Man, I sure like to latch on to some of that boogie-woogie tonight.
You mean some of that fat boogie-woogie?
That's what I need.
That's what I need, too. Hey, if you want to hear some boogie, then I know the place. It's just a no piano and a knocked-out bass. The drummer man's a guy they call 8-Beat Mac. You remember Doc and old Beat Me Daddy Slack. Man, it's better than chicken fried in bacon grease. Come along with me, boy, it's just down the road a piece.
Well, let's you and I walk on down the road a piece.
I'm walking, get going, I'm right behind. Into that cow.
Man, look out where you're stepping. That ain't second base.
Thank you.
there's a place you really get your kicks. It's open every night from about 12 to 6. If you want boogie woogie, then you get your fill. You put the 8 beats to you like an old steam drill. Come on with me, boy, before they lose their leads. It's just down the road, a piece of peace.
Ray McKinley and the orchestra, and Down the Road a Piece, done by the famous Will Bradley Trio and all the guys in the band. Ray McKinley is our very special guest on tonight's One Night Stand with the Big Bands, coming to you on WTIC, Hartford, Connecticut, Radio 1080. This is Arnold Dane, and our program is being brought to you by WTIC and by Moriarty Brothers of Manchester, Connecticut. When September rolls around, and it has rolled around, it seems like the price of everything goes up. But it's just the opposite at Moriarty Brothers. Moriarty Brothers is having an autumn closeout on all their remaining 1976 Mercury Bobcats. The Bobcat received an EPA rating of 34 miles per gallon on the highway and 24 miles per gallon in the city. This sleek runabout has a 2.3-liter four-cylinder engine, front disc brakes, and four-speed transmission for tough performance and smooth, easy handling. Moriarty Brothers has a great selection of styles, colors, and interior designs, and it's a sharp-looking little car, too. So this is your chance to take advantage of the values on all remaining 1976 Mercury Bobcats. Don't miss out now on prices starting at $2,995, excluding dealer prep and transportation. This September, get a new car during Moriarty Brothers' special autumn closeout. Visit Moriarty Brothers soon at 315 Center Street in Manchester and find out why you'll love that Bobcat. Ray McKinley, we have heard a story for years and years, and we're going to check its authenticity right now. That expression, beat me daddy, ate to the bar, was that really an extemporaneous outburst which replaced a drum break at the place called the Famous Door?
Exactly. That's what it was. We were playing the Famous Door, and I just didn't, this one night, feel like playing it on drums, and I hollered, "Do you know, oh, beat me, daddy, ate to the bar." And Don Ray and Huey Prince were sitting at a little table over there, and they called me over. I didn't know them at the time, and they introduced themselves and said, "Hey, that's a great title. You mind if we write a song like that, and we'll cut you in for a third of it?" I said, "Well, go ahead, write it." And these two birds came up. Now, you'll find my first wife's name on the thing, Eleanor Sheehy, because there was a publishing problem at the time. Don and Huey were signed with Leeds Music, and I was signed with Robbins. So was Will. And so now this posed a problem as to whose name should go on what songs and what records, you know, because the two big publishing companies, they weren't about to split a tune, at least not a tune of that stature, unproved as of that time. So we'd alternate, and this happens that at this particular time, Beat Me Daddy Ate to the Bar, we had Huey Prince, Don Ray and Huey Prince, and I couldn't put my name on it, so I put Eleanor Sheehy's name on it. That was her maiden name.
Are you still collecting royalties from that one?
No, because she got in some sort of a stupid mood some time later and sold her interest to, either Leeds Music or Don Ray in exchange for a mink stole, which was a big thing in those days. And she sold her interest. She said, "I don't want it. I'd rather have the mink stole." So go ahead.
I wonder if the mink stole has survived as well as Beat Me Daddy.
I'm afraid not.
In a little honky tonky village in Texas, there's a guy who plays the best piano by far. He can play piano in a way you like it, but the kind he plays the best is A to the bar. When he jams, it's a ball. He's the daddy of them all.
The people gather round when he gets on the stand. Then when he plays, he gets a hand. The rhythm he plays puts the cats in a trance. Nobody there bothers to dance. And when he jams with the bass and guitar, they holler, oh, beat me, daddy, head to the bar. A plink, a plank, a plink, plank, plink, plank, plunking on the keys. A riff, a rap, a riff, rap, riff, rap, riffing out with ease. And when he jams with a bass and guitar, they holler, oh, beat me, daddy, head to the bar.
How many copies is that sold? I know it sold originally 100,000 on both sides of a 78, and that was the equivalent of, well, a million-plus seller today.
Yes, it was. I remember the telegram we got from Wallenstein. Was that the boss of Columbia
yes.
at the time? Yeah, the thing had only been out about just a few weeks, and we got this telegram saying congratulations. I don't know, really, Arnold, how many it sold, but it did well.
It was followed up with many other variations of the same thing. A couple of the titles that I came across were Scrub Me Mama with a Boogie Beat.
An obvious follow-up, huh?
Fry Me Cookie with a Can of Lard.
Yeah, you see, yeah, we had to get a title for them somewhere. We didn't know, so we figured we'd go along with those things.
Was that the night at the Famous Door the first time that you'd ever done that, sung out something instead of a drum break?
No, it wasn't the first time, but it might have been the first time I ever used that particular, set of words.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Bradley McKinley Band survived about 3 years, and then I guess very much like the Dorseys, it was impossible for a band to serve two different masters, but there was no rancor, there was no bitterness between you and Will Bradley as there was between the Dorsey brothers.
Oh, no, we just decided to go our separate ways. We both knew, I think, that the war was going to sandbag us sooner or later anyway, but we just had a few internal problems. Will wanted one kind of music, and I wanted another, and he wanted to stay more around New York on location, and I didn't mind traveling on the road and so forth and so on. So we just split up. We went up, and he took the PA system, and I took this, and he took that, and that was it.
You still remain friends to this day?
Oh, yeah.
Is he still playing?
Yes, he is. He's on staff at NBC, or was up until just a couple of months ago. I'm sure he is. He has been for years.
Now, right after you and Will Bradley parted, let's see, did you form your own band? I guess you broke up late in 41. Was it before Pearl Harbor, do you recall?
No, it was after Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor was December 7th, and we broke up in January of 42. Mm-hmm. And I did get my own band, so did Will for a while. And we did fairly well. The band I had was a great little band. See, I had to get them either too young to be drafted or too sick or too old. As a matter of fact, when the draft, we tried to go in the Marines as a unit and were just about to make it. I'm kind of glad we didn't. But while the Marine Board in Washington was debating our status, ratings and all that stuff, we started getting draft notices, and we just made a picture out on the coast, and we were playing the Golden Gate Theater up in San Francisco, and boy, the draft notices started coming in like, just boom, 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 we're flying out of the box. So, about seven of us got tagged, and I said, well, this'll never do. We're gone, fellas. We're tagged, let's forget it. And I called Tommy Dorsey, and I said, what do you need? He says, anything you got.
Ray, let's recall another of those famous Miller melodies now that you also recorded with your own band, Kalamazoo.
Yes, it's true. A brand new gal is the pride of Kalamazoo. Ooh, K-A-L-A-M-A-Z-O. Oh, what a gal in Kalamazoo. I don't want to boast, but I know she's a toast of
Kalamazoo. Zoo.
Years have gone by. My, how she grew. I like to look when I get rid of books in
Kalamazoo.
I'm gonna send a wire, hopping on a flyer. I'm leaving today. Am I dreaming? I can hear her screaming.
Jackson!
listen, everything is okay. L-A-M-A-Z-O, oh, what a gal. She's a real flipperoo. I'll make my bid for that freckle face kid I'll marry into. I'm going to Michigan to meet the sweetest gal. In Kalamazoo. Ho, ho, what a gal. K-A-L-M-A-Z. Ho, ho, what a gal. My bid for that freckle face kid I'm hurrying to. I'm going to Michigan to meet the sweetest gal in California. Now,
let's see, Ray, after you and Will Bradley parted company, as you said, in 1942, you each went your own individual ways, formed your own bands, but they had very short lives because the Army came calling, and that's the time that you got a great musical treat. You were able to join the Glenn Miller Orchestra, and I'll bet that was a great band to play with.
The best. That was the best, in my opinion. Everything, from every angle, you know, ballads, production numbers, jazz, small band jazz, swing. That I think was the greatest band of all times. Thank you.
If Glenn Miller had survived World War II, would it have made any difference in the way that big bands play today, or would it have meant anything for the survival of other big bands that have since dissolved?
That's hard to say. I really don't know. I really don't know. I think, personally, Glenn would have gone out and taken an offer he had at 20th Century Fox to be a musical director of a very high status out there, and would have spent the rest of his time there. I don't think he would have stayed active in the... Well, he might have for a while, a year or two or three, but he was smart enough to have seen which way the ball was bouncing, you know, and I think he would have taken that offer because I know he had the offer.
Incidentally, to recap, we heard Farewell Blues by the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band, and a great band it was, with Bobby Nichols trumpet, Vince Carbone tenor, and Peanuts Huckle featured on clarinet. Moriarty Brothers of Manchester is announcing their clearance on all 1976 Mercury Bobcats. This sleek runabout received an EPA rating of 24 miles per gallon in the city and 34 miles per gallon on the highway. That's right, 34 miles per gallon. The Bobcat runabout has a 2.3-liter four-cylinder engine, front disc brakes, and four-speed transmission for tough performance and smooth, easy handling. Your longtime friends at Moriarty Brothers want you to get the most for your investment when it comes to purchasing an automobile, and that is why they recommend the Sporty Bobcat for anyone who wants to save gas and money, and that takes in most of us nowadays. So visit Moriarty Brothers at 315 Center Street in Manchester. You'll truly be glad that you did. Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer continues the tradition of excellence in service and selection on the stylish and economical Mercury Bobcat. Prices start from $2,995, excluding dealer prep and transportation. You'll love that Bobcat, and you'll love doing business with the friendly, reliable people at Moriarty Brothers in Manchester. And now back to Ray McKinley. And Ray, let's get back to that post-war era. What exactly was your desire at that point in your career? Was it to lead a Glenn Miller band?
The band I wanted was a band that I got together independently of the Miller, any association with Miller at all. I wanted a couple of the fellows who were in that band, and I got them. And we got Eddie Sauter to write our new book. And that band which started out in 46, I think, in my opinion, was as a 16 or 17 piece band, was as great as any band, maybe the greatest band, or certainly as great as any band that ever was in the country.
It was in 1956, I believe, that you did officially take over the Helen Miller sanctioned Glenn Miller band.
Yeah, except I like to correct you on one phrase. I know that the history, written history, says take over, but that assumes that there was a band in existence. There wasn't. See, Beneke had a dispute with the estate, and they broke up the band, and they took the music away from him and the right to use the name, and Tex continued on with his band called Music in the Mood or something, and the library was locked up. And then in 1956, Willard Alexander got together with the attorney for the estate, Dave McKay, and decided they'd like to reform a new Glenn Miller Orchestra and get the old library out and all that, you know. And this would be with the backing of the estate, financial backing. And they called Helen Miller, and Helen Miller wanted to know who was going to be the leader, and when she heard that I was to be the leader, she said, great.
You stayed with the Glenn Miller Band for about 10 years or so.
Almost, lacking about 4 months, from 56 to 66.
And finally, I guess you got kind of tired of all the travel and everything. You'd sort of had it at that point.
I got tired of living in a bus, I'll tell you that. Yeah, it was pretty rough because the band works very hard. Boy, they really pound that road. I mean it. I covered more miles with that band in 2 years than I ever did in the rest of my whole life. And it just got to where we were actually living in a bus. We'd sleep more in a bus than we ever would in a bed.
Ray, you were so active for so very long. I have a question that might be a little bit difficult to answer, but think back, and in your memory, who was your favorite female vocalist?
I think the one with the best, Laurie Peters was was my favorite on a few records she did with us. I just think the job she did on Just Imagine is fantastic. I've never heard a girl sing a song any better than that.
Just imagine that he loves me dearly. Just imagine I am his sincerely. Sending love notes, ending I love you. Seems that he's there as the day is closing. On his knees there, I'll find him proposing. He's not present, still it's pleasant. Just imagining. It's true.
Connecticut's Laurie Peters with Just Imagine, beautifully done with Ray McKinley and the orchestra. Ray McKinley, the music master who helped popularize Boogie Woogie for the big bands. Ray, what are your interests and hobbies now?
Oh, many things. I like to play golf, like all the other crazy people that play it. And I read a lot, and I like to tinker around with a hammer and a saw. You know, fool around and make things, little objects d'art. I don't even know what to call them, but things like that. And, of course, I still play, you know, with a small band, as I told you earlier, when I can get some good guys together, and they're kind of hard to find, Arnold. There aren't too many really great jazz musicians in the country. There never were. But when you're lucky enough to get, for instance, a band that I had up at the Rainbow Grill, I couldn't wait to go to work every night because it's such a pleasure playing with that caliber of musician. And as I say, there aren't too many of those fellas around. When you start a number and you know that it's going to be something that should be, you know, taped just on an ordinary number on a job, well, that's a great thing.
Ray, it's been an absolute pleasure to listen to your music over the years, and it's been a joy to sit down and converse with you and reminisce a bit.
The same here, Arnold. I've enjoyed it, too.
And so, with the playing of Adios, appropriately, by Ray McKinley and the Glenn Miller Orchestra, we wrap up our one-night stand with the big bands. Tonight, saluting Ray McKinley, the man and the music. A one-night stand with the big bands with our special guest, Ray McKinley, has been brought to you by WTIC and by Moriarty Brothers, 315 Center Street in Manchester, Connecticut's oldest Lincoln Mercury dealer, now in their 29th year of continuing excellence in sales and service. Thank you for joining us in this September one-night stand with the big bands, and we'll see you again in a month. This program was produced and edited by Bob Sherrago, and this is Arnold Dean.